This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 97 of the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me just for a change, it's Will Bentley.
Hello.
Yeah, Will's standing in for Rich this week. Will hasn't been on the air with us since July, a long time ago, but been keeping very busy and managed to sort of get him back. And hopefully we're going to get him back on a more sort of regular rotor in the near future.
Yeah, I even managed to watch a couple of films.
Damn, yeah. That's even that's a bit of a
It's an achievement.
It is. So we've got a bit of a fun episode this week. We're going to be looking at Giant Killer Ants, also known as Dead Ant. And our DTV throwback is the very fun Demon Wind. And in between that, we've got a slice of complete weirdness from David Lynch himself. What did Jack do? Okay, let's crack on. Okay, so our first review is Giant Killer Ants, also known as Dead Ant. A has-been rock band called Sonic Grave are looking to make a comeback and are about to appear at Coachella, not to be confused with Coachella. Before doing so, the band have planned a night of creative songwriting under the influence of a potent kind of peyote called the Sun. However, after taking it, they unwittingly unleash a curse upon themselves and they are attacked by killer ants, each wave larger than the last. Now, I totally enjoyed this film, Rich. Will?
Oh, no.
So, the curse.
Oh, no. I know how it is. I get it.
Yeah. No. Will. Yeah, I totally love this. It's billed as a cross between Tremors and Spinal Tap, which I think is generous, but they do kind of touch on both. On the minor side, the giant ant effects are pretty rubbish. I mean, at times it you can tell that the legs aren't even touching the ground. There's a lot of ambition there, and I really enjoyed the script, especially the bits surrounding the band themselves. I thought that was really, really cool. And the people playing the band, we have the likes of Jake Busey as the lead singer, for God's sake. And we've got Tom Arnold as their manager, and we've got Sean Astin as their latest bass player. As we find out during the film, bass players are rather disposable as they go. Some nice sort of conversations, in there about sort of the way they want the band to go and things like that. The whole sort of trippy bit where they take the peyote, I thought was really, really funny. And yeah, the sort of second half of the movie when the sort of the creature effects started coming in, I thought it was all handled pretty well overall. How about yourself?
No, I mean, I totally agree. I think there's an awful lot to be said about this film. It really, but one of the things is not going to be how brilliant the special effects are. But that actually fits completely. And to say it's like Tremors, I think that's a pretty apt comparison. I think there's more heart in the kind of quite sort of sentimental portrayal of like this kind of aging, hair rock band. Mm. I think they kind of got that right, all the kind of personalities and tropes, and it is actually, the gags are really funny. I mean, it's like, do you remember Bad News?
The Rick Mayall and
Ed Edmonds and Mayall and all that. Oh, it was a comic strip one, wasn't it? The band is really as kind of po-faced and kind of takes themselves kind of miles too seriously as that, but like in a really funny way. And Tom Arnold's character is brilliant. The manager.
Yeah, I mean, the best line in the film is when somebody goes, "Why have you got a gun strapped to your ankle?" And he goes, "I'm in the music business." Which I thought was just brilliant.
Yeah, says it all. Yeah. It was awesome. The comedy kind of duo, the guy who sells them the peyote stuff, what's his name? Bigfoot, the Native American guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And his sidekick are just so weird. They're just brilliantly weird. Like, you know, why have they got like a World War II bazooka right in the corner of their vegan roadside stand?
No, it's funny. Yeah, you're right. They got the characters right. I mean, another bit I really liked was, you know, it's no surprise that Sean Astin's character is the first to go, and there's just this brilliant sort of hurried conversation, sort of panicked conversation between the guitarist and Tom Arnold, where they're sort of going, "We can replace him. We can replace him. He's just the bassist. We know that other guy. Remember that other guy? Yeah, we can get him here tomorrow. It'd be really cool." You know, it's just like, oh, yeah.
Because that was it. They, you know, when the kind of, you know, the killer ant situation, you know, sort of starts to get basically impossible to ignore. You know, people start dying and stuff. You know, because it's like they were. You kind of think they would have been prepared to ignore it, when it becomes unignorable, you know, their priority is still to get to no cello.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I think that'll be the end of all their problems, sort of thing. There's another really weird bit. Well, there's a couple of weird bits when they bump into these two very young girls at the stand. And you know, the guitarist, I don't think he's actually named as such. Just spare me 2 seconds. He's just called Stereo Blasters on IMDb. But, you know, he tries to chat with these two girls going, "Oh, are you going to the Nocella Festival?" You know, and they're like, "Yeah, are you? And they go, "Yeah, I'm playing." You know, it's being really cool. And then they're going, oh, yeah, your band. Yeah, my mum used to be really into them. In fact, I think she sort of like, she said she screwed the guitarist one day. "Nice to meet you, Dad."
Yeah, and he freaks out. Because it's like a strong possibility.
You see him really panic because yeah, exactly. It's you know, goes through his head. But the other bit with that particular girl, when they're in the trailer, and he's sort of leaning over her, sort of whispering in her ear, going, "Oh, we've got to figure out a plan. We've got to figure out." And everyone's just watching him because it's like just grinding against her in a really, really unsavory way.
Oh, it was so creepy. I mean, like he managed to out creepiness the Tom Arnold's character
who was like a restraining order against restraining him. Orders. Did he catch that other story he tells as well, where you say, "No, remember we went to that other festival and you know, we met up with all our fans and we dressed in white robes and hoods and shit, and we set fire to the cross and then found out that actually it was a clan meeting."
yeah, it was like that didn't occur to you before. sort of recounting it as one of their best gigs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, no, there was actually quite a lot of really quite funny dark humor in that. But there was also one, I don't know if you spotted the Sean Astin's Shire reference when he was talking.
He did drop it.
Like, you know what, it took me sort of 10 minutes to realize that it was, because I didn't bother checking the cast list before I watched it. I just started watching it and I was like, that looks really familiar. But it's just like, it's such a massive hair. He's got like Slash from Guns N' Roses hair. And a baseball cap and sunglasses on, and I was like, and so, "Looks really familiar."
Yeah, and skateboard shorts. He just looks really weird. Yeah, and there's sort of the usual sort of plaid, flat flannel sort of shirt over the top. Oh god, yeah.
But it was like, oh god, it is. It's Samwise Gamgee. Yeah.
Yeah, the character that surprised me actually was Jake Busey as the lead singer, because he seemed, you know, usually when I've seen Jake Busey, he seems to be playing Jake Busey.
Yeah.
You know, even in Starship Troopers and things like that.
He was brilliant in that, yeah.
Yeah, but in this, he you know, he really did sort of like take on a different character.
He went method.
He did.
He went method on this one, and it worked. Because I didn't, you know, because, I mean, actually, again, it was one when I checked the cast list and then had to go back to the film. Oh, God. Like, yeah, bloody hell it is. You know, I mean, he's like a DTV stalwart. He's done so much stuff. And like you say, mostly playing sort of Jake Busey. It's like really quite, it's cool to see someone who you kind of respect anyway turns out to actually be good at the craft in a way that you didn't sort of expect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, so I really enjoyed this. It's available on this is on Amazon Prime at the moment. So, you know, if you're a subscriber, it's free. Go check it out. You might have been put off by the very sort of cheesy title, but this goes beyond the cheese, basically. There's a pretty smart film hiding behind some shoddy effects, and I thoroughly recommend it. So I'm giving this a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm going to mirror that completely. 7 out of 10, totally deserves it. There's a lot more to this film. The killer ants are actually quite a small part of it, to be honest with
They
you.
are, and some of the effects are pretty decent. It's only when they get to sort of ridiculous size and they're running behind the truck, and you can sort of see the legs flapping around a bit. That's when they get silly. But other than that, they're actually sort of done quite well. So yeah, check this out. It's on Amazon Prime. Won't cost you a penny. Our short shot this week is it was a huge surprise. So Richard sort of queued this up for me. What Did Jack Do? By David Lynch, no less, Mr. Twin Peaks, among other things. So written and directed by David Lynch. This is shot in black and white. It is essentially David Lynch playing a hard-boiled detective interrogating a monkey called Jack who can talk. And it is just the weirdest thing I have seen in a while. But at the same time, totally engrossing and enthralling, and you just can't take your eyes off it because it is just so fucking weird. The dialogue, some of it sounds like they're either just ad-libbing as they're going along, or they've deliberately sort of like taken snippets of dialogue from different conversations and put them together. Because some of it is incredibly nonsensical, but eventually you get this sort of rhythm of this idea that Jack he's been accused of killing the lover of his girlfriend, who happens to be a chicken. I hope we're not losing anyone with
Oh,
this, but
too late.
yeah, but it is just, watching it when he sits down next to the monkey, opposite the monkey at this train station, I'm going, okay. And then when the monkey starts talking, I was like, what the fuck is going on? It is absolutely bizarre. Will, your thoughts on this?
I think bizarre is an understatement. I mean, even for David Lynch, and I would like to point out from the start that actually David Lynch is one of my favorite directors, and partly because of he. This is, I think, this is how he. This is one of the things that he loves and enjoys is what he does to narrative. It's like the whole point of this film is, he does it in a lot of his films, not all of them. We watch some of his, a lot of his more mainstream films, that he knows exactly how to do a narrative, like a clear narrative that, with a story that goes from one place to another and a few surprises along the way, and everyone kind of understands what's going on. But like some of his more sort of abstract films, or like some episodes of Twin Peaks, what he's brilliant at is that bit in narrative where you think, because someone will say something that, if you look at it objectively, actually is not really clear at all, but you think, because you think you've heard it before, that you know where it's going, and he builds like a feeling and then just derails you onto another, so that you think, oh no, okay, so it's this, and it's just and constantly kind of shifting like what you think, what you understand, and it just sort of creates a very unsettling feeling, like where you think that you're following a 1950s hardboiled detective, Sam Slade type of, kind of narrative. And the feeling is all there all the way through, but your brain's racing to keep up with the stuff that he's saying. And in reality, like a lot of it is just nonsense. It doesn't actually.
It's like every other exchange actually is part of the narrative, and then every other exchange is like, are you gambling with your life, Jack, or something like that?
What was
It
it
just like,
sort of goes, do you play for keeps? Is there any other
that's
way?
right.
And it's like, what? That doesn't actually mean anything. It just doesn't actually sort of.
You've been playing with the birds, Jack. It's like,
Yeah.
what?
You know,
You
and he does,
found.
I mean, he does sort of come back to it because obviously, you know, the love interest in this story is a chicken, you know, weirdly, like, even more weirdly, because it's not like it's not weird enough.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? And that's, I mean, the animation in it, like the way it's shot is brilliant. Mm. It's like, it's noir. It's basically classic noir.
Yeah.
And he obviously loves noir, and he kind of knows how to create that feel. You know, everything looks like people have been smoking on set for sort of the last couple of hours. You know, everything's slightly kind of fuzzy and grainy, and, you know, and the sound as well, the sound quality is perfect. And the dialogue, the intonation, his intonation, and the, you know, the, like Jack's, that everything, it's like, it's just right. It's a 1940s kind of 50s, you know, it's a film stock even, you know, everything, everything looks sort of just like that. But then the animation of the monkey's face talking, it's like those weird internet memes where someone sort of puts person's lips over the mouth of an animal.
Yeah.
But it, you know,
at first, I mean, you know, for some of it, especially the first couple of lines of dialogue, it really does look like it's the monkey's mouth talking.
Yeah.
You know, it's only when they sort of, you know, he has to sort of say something a bit more sort of complex that you can see where, you know, where that's the lines are.
Yeah, that's a person's mouth. They've just kind of cut it out and stitched it over. Like, you know what I mean? They've just edited it on, spliced it onto this one. But then that's the thing. It's like, actually, this probably, for a 50-minute shot, this probably took hours to get right, because all of the monkey's kind of head movements and responses, reactions, actually almost fit in that weird, surreal, dreamlike, you know, way. That, you know, it's like his conversation, because he's just still. But if you ever watch anything with him in, he's usually like a very still point in the screen, and, you know, whatever sort of when he's cameoed in a lot of his stuff, he's not a very mobile person.
Yeah. But I think that's also the classic sort of like detective thing, isn't it? You know, it's the interrogation. You're sort of leaving these sort of big empty pauses and waiting for your opposite number to sort of fill them. It's like who's going to move first, sort of thing. You know, not many people can sort of live in that sort of vacuum space that you know has been deliberately set up for you.
It just only creates tension, doesn't it? That anticipation sort of thing. You want to say something, but then you're so confused by the whole narrative that you wouldn't know what to say. It was, I mean, at first I was like, oh, you know, when Lynch is, you know, I think he's brilliant, but I was watching this one thinking he's really enjoying himself here, but I'm not sure I'm on the same bus right now that he's on, really.
But actually, going in opposite directions.
Yeah, but you know, actually you sort of, you watch it and think, no, do you know what? That was 15 minutes of just of him showing how clever he is, and really, why not? You know, he is.
Yeah, absolutely. There's only one other person in this. There's a waitress who comes in. She's totally unfazed by the fact that she's serving coffee to a monkey. Doesn't even comment on it. So there's obviously a very sort of strange world that this is sort of being set in. I was going to include a link to a trailer for this. If I do find a proper trailer, I will put it on. But the clip I found on YouTube is the song at the end. But unfortunately, the clip goes further and shows the whole of the end of the film. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. You know, I want people to sort of be able to discover it. So if I don't manage to find an actual trailer or another clip for this, this is on Netflix at the moment. Again, like we said about the Ant film earlier, you know, if you're a subscriber, it's there. It takes 15 minutes of your day, you know, your lunch hour or whatever. And if you're a fan of David Lynch, or if you like something a bit weird and strange, then we definitely recommend you check it out. Okay, so our DTV throwback this week is Demon Wind. In this one, a troubled young man called Corey takes his girlfriend and a bunch of buddies to investigate the strange circumstances surrounding his grandparents' death many decades earlier. Arriving in the desolate rural area, they discover the locals aren't too friendly and the farm buildings all but destroyed. Yet they still hold secrets to share. Deadly secrets. Now, this came out in 1990, so it was a few years after the likes of Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2. It is heavily influenced by those films, I think.
I'd go with that, yeah.
It, the only real issue is, I mean, there's some great ideas in this film, there really are, but it's ever so slightly sort of mismanaged all the way through. It doesn't really have a lot of atmosphere. It has some great set pieces, but they're sort of let down by the sort of reaction shots by some of the cast. I'll give you an example. When they arrive at the thing and the first attack, they succumb. A little girl turns up and touches one of the girls, and she instantly turns into a little porcelain doll. Just told you we'll get you or something stupid like that. And her boyfriend's face is just like, and that's basically his whole reaction. He just like raises his eyebrows, go, it doesn't seem to be too fussed, basically. Yeah. And I that's the sort of issue I have with it. But I think it's got a lot of good ideas, and some of the effects work is actually pretty decent for the time, for this sort of budget as well.
There's 500 grand.
Yeah, exactly. There's one in particular I really liked when they come across the farm, or what remains of the farmhouse. And it's literally just a front door and a bit of a wall on the outside. But when they open the door, you know, they're taken into another dimension where the whole place still exists. But they sort of show a side shot of them walking through and not coming out the other side, sort of thing, which I thought was, you know, just really, really well done. Little elements like that. I'm going to get onto a couple of character bits in a minute, but I just want to get your initial thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the special effects do not hold up to the test of time. But, you know, I was sort of watching this and thinking, oh, geez. And then I was like, no, be kind, because it was 1990, that's a long time ago. And it was a shoestring budget. Hmm. And, you know, someone really loved horror and put, you know, a lot into this.
They threw loads into this. They really. Yeah. This is a film packed full of incident, really.
Yeah, yeah, they did. I mean, narrative. It's odd. It's what you said, though. I mean, the editing is weird because I suppose we're so used now to like really quite quick, snappy editing, and you know things flow faster, like filmic language is faster. Yeah. So I was watching this film, and it is like actually some of those reaction shots, like you say. You know, it's not just that they seem kind of incongruous, and I've got a theory about why that reaction shot might have been the way that it was. Well, it's not a theory. I read that they actually lost the entire first day's shoot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they had to all the way through. All the way through. So they probably lost like stuff, and then had to do the, you know, had to sort of work around it, which is never ideal. But you know, it's just like some of the editing is turgid, basically, and like, you know, there's bits where you're kind of thinking this is going really slowly for what's supposed to be happening, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just because the way that things are cut together, so the actors end up looking quite stiff when you kind of look at it again, you kind of realise that's just the way it's being cut.
Sure.
You know, so there's a lag, and that partly could just be because things happen slower. Like as an audience, we're just used to things happening a lot faster, and there's more options open to editors now with the amount of technology there is and stuff. You know,
that's true. Yeah, you know, it's a lot cheaper then. Now.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I mean, like you know, it is. When you say it's packed full of incident, actually, there is an awful lot of ideas. One thing I will say is that the opening scene, which is what happened to the grandparents, what I thought was actually, you know, narratively like a really, really good. Sort of, it was just a good opening scene. It was a good story. It was a good story because it kind of it didn't force feed you. It kind of piqued your interest.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? I think it was well done.
Yeah, and it sort of sets up, you know, it sets up your expectations of what's going to come. I think as well.
Yeah.
And what these guys are walking into. So I mean, one of the things I did like, apparently, the director Charles Philip Moore, he was asked to write a script. For this, while working on another film, to use the same locations as this other film that he was working on at the time, and then by the time he finished his script, those locations were no longer available. So you know he's sort of back to square one. So that doesn't really help. Apparently, the fog that we see in the film, there's a sequence where the characters are trying to escape and they get surrounded by fog, and it kind of takes them back to the farmhouse, so they can't escape. Apparently, that was just like real fog they got stuck with, and just like, probably just had to do a very quick reshoot, so you know, a rewrite of the script, you know, to sort of build it in.
That's a measure. Like, to be honest with you, like I said, it's not, you know, it's not the best demonic zombie horror that's ever been made, even for that time. But really, what they achieved, considering they're on a shoestring and, you know, working with sort of limitations like that, they actually did a bang up job of coming out with something that hung together narratively, like completely, seamlessly.
More or less, there's a bit towards the end where suddenly a priest turns up and takes half the zombies away.
Did you not recognise the priest though?
No,
it was Garage Guy. It was Garage Guy from the first.
Oh, right. Like from the early bit.
Grumpy Garage Guy, I'm sure of it.
Possibly. You're probably right. But yeah, it just seemed weird at the time. Now, you know, we say this film was packed full of incident and things. Now, as you're aware, Will, you know, the traditional horror film structure is to have five protagonists. Mm-hmm. You know, as we all know from Cabin in the Woods,
yes.
And various other things. But I mean, you know, realistically, if you've got five protagonists in a 90-minute movie, that means you can kill off somebody every 20 minutes and have your final girl at the end.
Like a mathematical formula.
Yeah, it is. So, but this one, you know, the killing characters off left, right, and centre, and at the halfway points, the director goes, we need more characters. So these other, like, three people turn up who are late to the party kind of thing. you know, just to sort of reboost the cast a bit. But I want to concentrate on a couple of guys. There's two characters in this called Stacy and Chuck who turn up in a Cadillac. And there's some sort of, like, amateur magicians.
Magicians, yeah.
Although that element, it never comes into it again after this sort of initial bit. But these guys are a couple of badasses, basically.
Yeah.
And I got a feeling that some sort of chief executive for the Warner Channel back in 2004 or something, you know, came home late one night after a few beers and saw this film on TV and then got the idea for Supernatural.
Yeah.
Because you know, these two guys, you know, it's like their friend sort of said, oh, by the way, I need you to turn up to this sort of rural area. We need to find out what happened to my grandparents who died sort of mysteriously sort of 30 years ago. And they turn up with shotguns and trench coats. Yeah. I'm thinking, yeah, these guys have seen horror movies before.
Yeah, exactly. And they ride in their Cadillac with the magician guy tossing, you know, the sort of unfolding flowers and doves out of it and playing music.
Really playing Ride of the Valkyries as well.
Ride of the Valkyries, as though they're sort of a cross between Siegfried and Roy and David Blaine, like riding over the hill in a Cadillac. It's just, it's just
Apocalypse Now, yeah.
So weird. It was just so weird.
Yeah, but these two, unfortunately, you know, they go out in a bit of a blaze of glory because. It's almost as if they made a suicide pact before, you know, at some point in the movie, they decided to sort of make a suicide pact and go out with a blaze of glory and sort of, you know, all guns blazing. And this film is worth seeing alone just to see Chuck do a spin kick and kick a zombie's head off.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
That was
brilliant. I'm gonna do this. That was when their massive sack full of shotgun shells ran out, wasn't it?
That's it. Yeah.
They literally. It's like, what did they think was going to happen? But, you know what I mean? Like, what they had just more guns than, you know.
It was just really funny because you know the rest of it in the earlier scenes they were just like. Yeah, we're just going to hang back and see what happens. You know, we're all going to go into the spooky house. Go, all right, you guys go first. We'll follow you. We'll see what happens to you guys first. Which, you know, but
and then start kicking ass in a big way.
Indeed, yeah. But no, this is a very inventive film. There's, you know, some good looking models and things. There's a you know, they come across a skeleton crucified. You know, which looks really cool and spooky.
The creature effects were really, I thought, were really good. And there's a bit when the demons kind of first, I think it's when the demons first show up, and there's like the, I think it's supposed to be his grandmother's or one of the first victims anyway from like the first event. floating, and they, you know, they sort of show her floating along with her cloven hoofs, because it's quite old school demons, isn't it?
You know, it is, of,
And she's sort of floating along with it, and the model effects were like, you know, for back then, that was kind of Frank Fangoria front page stuff. You know,
it would have been.
Yeah, it's like really decent.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. The reason I picked this is because I was watching some riff tracks things on YouTube or something, and I came across the trailer and I thought, okay, what's this? Because I'd never heard of it before, and which is weird, you know, because we grew up in the 80s and 90s, and you know, this would have been our bread and butter back then.
Exactly, and I'm really surprised because I'd never heard of it either, and this is back when I was watching all kinds of stuff like this.
Exactly. I'm surprised I didn't see a trailer for it back then or anything. You know, it's just passed us by completely. But again, you know, it's there on Amazon Prime at the moment. It's, 90 minutes or so? It's very entertaining. It's, you know, it's cheesy as hell. It really is these days. Yeah. And, you know, as we've discussed, there are pacing issues and editing issues. But if you're a forgiving sort, I think you will enjoy this. There's a lot to enjoy. If you're into the old school stuff, you know, back in the sort of late 80s, early 90s, there's some really, really good stuff in here. It's definitely worth checking out. And that's our show. That was episode 97. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. Check out the films. They're all available on streaming on the cable services. Netflix for the David Lynch short and Amazon Prime for the others. Thank you to Will for joining me this evening and running through these two films.
Absolute pleasure.
Awesome. We'll get you back on the show ASAP as well. Tune in next time. Rich will be back for the next couple of episodes. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.